Takes
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of The Week That Was. My name is Saeed Khan. It's nice to be back in the D. I was doing a bit of traveling last week. I was in Baku, Azerbaijan. Strongly recommend going there.
Wow.
What a wonderful place.
What were you doing there?
There was a conference, and I wasn't going to turn down a chance to go to Baku, a little bit off the beaten path, but lovely city on the Caspian. A bit of ultra-modern art, architecture, Turco-Persian, and old Soviet architecture, which now in the lobby of all these buildings have such Soviet-era stores like Louis Vuitton, Dolce & Gabbana, Lamborghini, and Aston Martin. Somewhere, Joseph Stalin's ashes are churning over.
There's a really nice Starbucks there downtown. Did you go to that?
There is a really nice Starbucks there, but I actually went to a place called Cup of Coffee, which was a little bit less corporate.
You know, in Bethlehem,
out of this panel of six have been to Baku.
Right.
I mean, mine was a joke, Nancy.
In Bethlehem,
they have a Stars and Buck.
Yeah,
it's all the same green, same coloring as Starbucks, but it's called Stars and Buck.
That sounds like a club for scantily clad dancers, yeah. Alan. But I digress. Well, let me go around the horn and introduce everybody. First, we have host of the new podcast, Detroit in Black and White, Adolf Mongo. We have attorney Steve Fishman. We have former federal prosecutor Michael Bellotta. And of course, we have intrepid investigative journalist Nancy Derringer. And the co-founder of Deadline Detroit, Alan Langle. And before we get started with the convo, let's go to our sponsor.
I'm Wayne County Treasurer Eric Sabree. There are payment plans available to help save your property. Visit our website at treasurer.waynecounty.com or email us at taxinfo@waynecounty.com for further information. We're here to help.
Actually, Michael, if you're interested in Formula One, the race in Baku is next month, and you can stand there holding your Starbucks as you watch the cars whiz around.
Yep. So. You know, a colleague of mine had a daughter who did an internship in Baku, and he visited her there. And I have to say, just like your social media posts, the photographs of the place are astonishing. I mean, who knew? I guess they have a lot of oil money there.
They have an incredible amount of oil and gas money. Yeah. In fact, there are places where the natural gas is seeping out of the ground and it's already in flames, kind of like when you see a geyser or something. And I think you probably saw the kind of flame architecture. That was my hotel, the Fairmont Baku Flame Towers.
Wow.
Which you can see from anywhere on in the city, partly because it's up on a hill. But yeah, strongly recommend. There's an endorsement for a former Soviet republic, certainly a little bit tamer than some of the other former Soviet republics and what's going on there.
Maybe we can get them as a sponsor of the show.
You know, I should have thought about that. You know,
talk them up a little more.
Yeah, now that we can do it streaming and we don't have to rely on shortwave radio to broadcast.
if they fly us all there, business class on Emirates, or maybe even first class, let's just go for the whole thing. And that would be great.
Live broadcast.
Take the show on the road? Yeah, why not? Yeah. Okay, well, someone who may not have that kind of mobility is former President Donald Trump, depending on what happens in his many, many different criminal cases that are going on. And we have a clip on this.
Yes, we do.
Whether it's the Mar-a-Lago raid or the Unselect Committee hoax, the perfect Georgia phone call, it was absolutely perfect. Or the Stormy Horseface Daniels extortion plot. They're all sick, and it's fake news.
Now, I don't know what makes a perfect phone call. All I can think of is Olympic gymnastics and sticking the landing. But like I said, maybe there's different metrics to phone calls. Well, former President Trump certainly did put out an awful lot of preemptive malarkey on the on his social media by saying that he was going to get arrested 3 days ago and that he was going to go ahead and mobilize his supporters to get out there and protest, to which clearly the New York Police Department and others did try to provide some kind of preemptive scaffolding and an organization around it. Did anyone find that cable news was fetishizing over this to the point where they were going to go pay-per-view themselves? I don't know. That's just what it seemed like. But Friday, here we are. It is now 3 days past. No indictment, no arrest out of New York or anywhere else. Where do we stand with the various cases? Yes, Alan.
I have a question for Michael. In terms of all the pressure that's being put on the, you know, Jim Jordan and Trump and all that. And also, the one question is, does that ever get taken into account? And the second one, first that one.
Sorry, can you explain your question?
I was wondering, you know, everybody's trying to put pressure on the Manhattan District Attorney and saying your case is bullshit. And this is, you know, you're seeing it on all the cable news networks where you see all the Republicans saying, you know, sure, he's not above the law, but he's not beneath the law, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Does that, when you were in office, when you were at the U.S. Attorney's office and there was pressure, there were investigations going on and people were trying to derail them, how does that play? Is there any part of the discussion or you just say, ignore the noise?
The goal is to just do what you just said, is to ignore the noise and just focus on whether or not your evidence is such that you should be bringing a criminal case. But to say that federal prosecutors or even state prosecutors, like the Manhattan DA in this case, that they're oblivious to all that pressure and all those voices, those very loud voices, is naive. Of course, you're aware of it, but you try not to let outside pressures dictate the timing of any kind of indictment of somebody politically sensitive. Having said that, though, you certainly are aware of things like election dates, and you don't want to indict someone, you know, on the eve of an election. You don't want to be seen as affecting anything. You don't want to affect anything, and you don't want your investigation to be and prosecution to be tainted by the perception that it's political, which I think is what's happening in spades to Mr. Alvin Bragg there in Manhattan.
But isn't that an inevitability, Michael? I mean, here you're dealing with the potential criminality of a politician. It's hard to get away from it being either politicized or being viewed as political.
One way to get away from it, I think, would be to not indict him. Not indict. If you're going to be charging him, the first charge really probably shouldn't be what the Manhattan District Attorney is investigating, which, quite frankly, is, you know, it's like we caught Osama bin Laden and instead of killing him, we want to put him on trial. The first thing we're going to put him on trial for is not killing thousands of people, but instead for illegal reentry into the United States. It's like, wait a minute, this guy tried to take over our country, essentially, invalidating lawful elections. And he has real charges that he could be brought by the special counsel for obstructing an official official proceeding, being one of the most important proceedings that we do in this country, which is verifying the results of a presidential election. So that should be, in my view, you know, out in the forefront. The problem is that these different prosecutors, I doubt very much that they're working together on timing and deciding who's going to go first. I don't think that's happening. I may be naive about that, but I don't think so. So I would like, I think the way around that, the politicization, is to have a crime that you're going to be charging that no one can deny is serious. And that is cannot be said for the crime of an accounting error or intentional false statement in an accounting of what's called a legal expense, but was really hush money paid to Stephanie Clifford. So, you know.
I'm just wondering, are these prosecutors scared of Donald Trump? It seems like nobody wants to be the first. It's like, here he is. He's been accused of doing all these things, and he's still walking around. He is in control of the narrative. It's like, who's going to be number one? Who's going to come step out there and say, okay, let's charge it?
I think I have a term for it. It's called prosecutorial constipation.
I've never heard that one, Alan.
I've said this 10 times on this show.
I know exactly what
Georgia case is the case. Fannie Willis is this far from doing it. I don't know why. I agree with Michael 1,000% about the nature of the offenses that Bragg is thinking about charging him with in New York. I don't know why they don't wait. It sounds like maybe in 2 weeks or so, she's going to come down, and that is a case. And that's where his own voice incriminates him. And that's the kind of thing that Michael is talking about, where, yeah, you can still quarrel if you want to be a crazed in that crazed 30% of the people who don't care what he does. But the normal, ordinary person can listen to that phone conversation, which they've already heard, and they'll hear it some more, and say, hey, now there's criminal conduct. He's trying to bribe, or either bribe or threaten, the usual Trump, the usual bully thing. You bribe and then you threaten, or you threaten and then you bribe.
I have a question for Steve. When we see down in Florida, where or in the Florida case with the documents and stuff, where Trump is now alleged to have lied to his attorneys who have then fronted for him, has that ever happened to you as a defense attorney, where you vouch for somebody when they lied to you?
Alan, you've kind of known me for a long time. I think you'd know a lot better than that. If a guy told me that this is all the documents and they're under subpoena from the Justice Department, I'm going to make sure I got him by the throat when he's telling me that. And if it's a guy like Donald Trump, you know, he tells you it's raining outside, you leave your umbrella and put your shorts and a T-shirt on. I mean, you know who you're dealing with. You're dealing with a pathological liar. Have I dealt with pathological liars? On occasion. And I don't trust one word they ever say. Yeah. So, you know, for a lawyer, I don't know this guy Corcoran. Michael doesn't know him either. But Michael and I had plenty of cases that were high publicity cases when he was in the U.S. Attorney's Office. We never had any problem with me complying with the things that they needed, or with me getting information from them, from he and the agents, that was accurate. We just didn't do anything like that. But when you're dealing with somebody like Trump, who, well, you know what I say is, what, he's a career criminal and he has a criminal mind and he's a pathological liar. So for any lawyer to pretend that he's going to rely on the word of this guy, that's insane. The lady, I don't remember her name, the female lawyer, didn't she, when she turned some stuff over, she said something about to the best of her knowledge, I think.
Right.
And at least you got to say that. You cannot possibly vouch for a guy who's never told the truth in his whole life.
I agree with Steve. If you're representing Trump, you got to start every sentence with this phrase, on information and belief.
Exactly.
you have to say that because you have no idea if what you're saying is true. And, you know, it's very interesting, though, that the D.C. Court of Appeals has now ruled that the crime fraud exception,
right,
it applies, which does not happen every day. This ruling essentially pierces the veil of attorney-client privilege and requires Corcoran, or I suppose Corcoran and any other attorneys who are talking to Trump about turning over these documents to reveal their communications and to reveal the documents involved. And that is really, really rare. And that's because there was enough evidence that DC Circuit found to show that it was that Donald Trump was lying to them or involving them in his crime, involving the classified documents.
Nancy, you've been rather quiet regarding Trump.
We have such a good panel of knowledgeable attorneys. I just feel like this is one case where I can sit it out. I mean, everybody knows how I feel about Trump. I know how everybody on this panel feels about Trump. And there's just, what more is there to be said? I want to see a perp walk. I want to see him in cuffs. I want to see the overcoat draped over the cuffs so it doesn't look like handcuffs.
Well,
like
apparently so does he, Nancy. Steve.
Really? He wants a perp walk?
He wants it all.
Wow. Okay.
We can tell you, Michael and I can assure you that there wasn't a way on this planet that he was going to be, quote, arrested out in the public street like you're arresting some guy just stuck up the gas station.
Right.
It's never going to happen. When we have cases, Michael would call me and say, hey, we got the indictment. When do you want to bring the guy? And then we'd make arrangements. And sometimes it might be a week or 10 days or whatever. He did it because he can't stand that being the center of attention.
Yeah,
that's why he said it. And he wanted to rile up his base. You got to think like a criminal. over and over again. The man has a criminal mind. And that's why he did what he did. He's trying to get the attention back on him. He's trying to get that 30% of those crazy people go out in the streets, do something nuts. He doesn't give a shit about them. He doesn't care if they all go to jail or get clubbed over the head by the cops. He's just trying to raise a bunch of noise. What's going to happen? I mean, wasn't it hilarious when they went to the lawyers and the lawyers said, we don't have anything to do. Mr. Bellotta didn't call me. It'd be like if they were going to arrest Monica Conyers. But all of a sudden she makes a statement she's getting arrested on Tuesday, and we would all bust out laughing. You're not getting arrested. We're going to come in. That's the story.
You know, the interesting thing is that I just saw a poll last night on TV which showed that Trump popularity is rising and Ron DeSantis is falling, which I have just happened to have a little thing.
Republican insiders are concerned that the rivalry between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis could lead to a civil war within the party, which is perfect because they already have the flags.
Hey, Nancy, I think you and I should go do some karaoke, you know, like a criminal. For the very first time.
But I, you know, it's interesting. I mean, if you turn on the TV, and I mean, look, 2016, when Trump ran, the New York Times, the Washington Post, they got back their mojo. The Post was like, its mojo was fading. I mean, they became, you know, CNN, they became so popular. And again, I mean, if you watch cable news, I mean, it is, you know, it's funny. I was watching cable news, MSNBC, CNN, and they're talking about Trump this, Trump that. And I said, I wonder what they're talking about on Fox News. So I go over to Fox News and they're like, boy, oh boy, the Bidens are in trouble. They've never been in trouble like this before.
I feel bad for how much time I waste on social media, but I have to say it probably doesn't come close to what you guys waste watching cable news. And when we were traveling down to Nashville, we stayed in a hotel and I turned it on for about, I just don't know how anybody can stand it.
Here's a Tucker Carlson little clip.
We do know that Trump is the subject of a grand jury investigation in Manhattan. That's a city that voted against Donald Trump by almost 80% in the last presidential election. We also know that the grand jury was impaneled by a Soros-funded DA called Alvin Bragg, who looks and acts like a Tawana Brawley era Al Sharpton.
Well, that's not racist at all, you know.
Oh, I mean, I was kind of thinking that Idris Elba in the made-for-TV movie coming up. I mean, Alvin's a good-looking guy.
It's amazing the racism that it is so not subtle on Fox, and they just get away with it. It's okay. It's just
they just pulled out the old playbooks. The George Wallace, Strong Thurmond, they bringing them back to life. Only these people today, they know better. They know that they are selling a lot of bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at this polling though. I mean, here you've got Trump who's among Republicans polling around 54%. I think Ron DeSantis, who has not yet officially declared his candidacy, polling around 26%. And then the next closest, I think, is 7% at Nikki Haley. And I think Vivek down in Ohio is at 1%, so he's holding steadfast.
I got bad news for Perry Johnson, man. I just don't think it's going to happen for you, buddy, no matter how much money you throw at it.
Is there the possibility, then, that if these two guys beat each other up, that somebody else could come in the race? No, Nancy?
Not unless they have a 20 paces at dawn and they both shoot each other dead. I don't see anything else happening here. I mean,
although it's a long race, we saw in 2016, it was like in the Republican race, it was like every person was the front runner, at least for a day or a few days. Like the guy got Godfather Pizza. He was the top guy for 3 days.
Herman Cain.
Herman Cain, the late Herman Cain.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So it's possible that, you know, people are going to get tired of Trump and DeSantis, but in the end, I agree with you.
Based on what's happening in the Michigan GOP, I say no way.
Trump is not going anywhere, even if he gets indicted and Trump is running. He got 40% of the nuts that's going to follow him to hell.
Yeah,
you know, he can do a Jim Jones. And 20% of that take poison for it.
Well, you know, I was at the gym earlier today and speaking to one of the people that works there who always asks me, hey, what's going on in the world? And we were talking about Ukraine and all, and another person there at the gym overheard us. I noticed down on the bench he had his MAGA hat, but he just launched into this screed. He says, there's no reason for us to be out there in Ukraine. And this is just, they're showing us that we have a corrupt government and that this is all due to the trans movement. This is why Russia and China are trying to go ahead and protect their societies and social media. And it was easily the most nonlinear conversation I've ever experienced in my life, because he was just spewing talking points. Which
sounds
had,
like he's got some steroid poisoning maybe going on, huh?
There was some kind of rage, but this was me being, of course, Boone in Animal House, and you know, I think I should be leaving. What a good idea!
I take it you didn't let him spot you at all.
you was woke. You too woke, man.
Yeah,
I'm too woke. But there are people who, before, probably had the same kind of adoration for Trump, now seem to be heading for the same exits. Anthony Puma from our very own great state of Michigan admitted to breaking into the U.S. Capitol on January the 6th, 2021, through a broken window. Of course, he was armed with his own GoPro camera to post it onto Facebook. But now he says President Donald Trump tricked him into rebelling that day, and that he shouldn't go to prison for it. Apparently, the judge didn't buy it, and he gave him 9 months anyways. But it seems as though, either because there's an epiphany happening in this, of course, holy season of Passover, Ramadan, and Easter, people seeing the light, or perhaps there really is a kind of a disillusionment.
They're all saying that, though. They're all the January 6th people are saying that. I was led down the primrose path by a con man, and I don't believe a word any of them are saying, because I think that they still are absolutely down with the clown, and they are not, they're just saying that to try to get, to throw themselves on the mercy of the
court. They're giving $1 million weekly or whatever. He's getting paid.
Yeah.
I want a million. With the clown.
Yeah, that's a good
and
one.
Have a picture. You know what? It's interesting that Trump has called for people to go out and basically riot if he gets indicted. And I don't think people are going to do that. It sounds scary, like, yeah, get out there and take back our country and stuff like that. But I think when people went to the Capitol, they really, some of them at least, believe they were doing it on behalf of the president and they were going to be protected. They were, you know, what more patriotic could you be than to fight? The president has ordered us to the Capitol. But right now, I think all those people are going to prison, or not all of them, but, you know, key players in there are going to prison. And I think they're realizing, holy shit, this is not worth, you know, 3, 4, 5 years of my life to, you know, to be down with the clown.
Well, the number of protesters that showed up in New York after he put out the initial call was outnumbered by the hot dog carts. So clearly, and some of them probably bought hot dogs from those carts. So
can I say something about Puma though before we leave Puma.
Yeah,
if we haven't already left him.
No, we haven't left Puma.
Puma essentially is trying a version of an entrapment defense by saying, you know, I was trapped or tricked into doing this by the government. Essentially, he was still a president at the time. But in entrapment law, we have something that defeats an entrapment defense, and that's something called predisposition. That means that you were already disposed to do that thing even before the entrapment. In this case, Donald Trump had telling him to go to the Capitol. And I think we have that with Mr. Puma, because one of the things that he posted said, if we don't, we aren't able to change the election results, quote, we might have to start killing some commie bastards, end quote. I would say that's Putin's position. So I'm not surprised that the
judge didn't buy it.
Thank you for that, Mike. I didn't realize that that's an intriguing deployment of the entrapment defense. Otherwise, I thought he was just going to use the Marion Barry defense, just with a different gender. Yeah. For those of you who remember that. Hey, Steve, go ahead.
I think Michael will agree with this because he heard it plenty when he was a prosecutor. You got to be very careful as a defense lawyer in what you allow your client's position to be after they've been convicted. Particularly, did this guy plead guilty or did he go to trial? I don't know. Does anybody know?
Let's see.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Well, regardless, when you're making your presentation to the judge, if you wanted to say something like that, I would never let him say anything. I would say it on his behalf, and I wouldn't say it like that. I doubt it would affect the judge. Knew what he or she, if it was the he or she, I don't know. But I would say something along the lines of, look, he allowed himself to be influenced. And you never try to say, at least I don't believe in, blaming somebody else, because that's all we ever hear in court. Right, Michael? That's what we always hear. I did it, but it was because my dog died or something like that. I think if I'm representing somebody that got into a January 6th thing, and I want to make that point to the judge, I certainly wouldn't say that that's the only reason. I wouldn't make an entrapment argument, as Michael was saying. I would say, look, I was weak, I was dumb, I was uninformed, blah, blah, blah. I responded to the crap, but I certainly wouldn't blame it the way you described it. I wouldn't do that.
Well, apparently the day before January 6th, he posted on Facebook, tomorrow is the big day, rig is red, a rig for red, and war is coming. So... a plethora of T-shirt slogan ideas, Nancy, you know, to go with Down with the Clown on this one. But let me go ahead and just slightly go off the menu for a second. And that is the congressional hearings and just the general rhetoric against China, whether it's regarding TikTok or whether it's regarding China's sort of new role as a diplomat in the world. A lot of it is couched in the whole terminology of communism by politicians and by even media. Is this a good thing?
The whole China thing is just so like overwhelming, really. I mean, the one thing is clear, and Michael, being in the U.S. Attorney's Office, may have had some exposure to this. The Chinese have been stealing intellectual property for decades, and continues to do that. So at the same time, we had reached a point where we were doing joint ventures with China. We were, you know, there and here. And, you know, China's involved in some of the battery or different kinds of auto things. And so it's a little bit leery. I mean, they're talking about banning TikTok now. And some of the, you know, liberal Democrats are on board, and I don't know what to make of it. I feel like I need to know more about it, but it's an uneasy feeling, like with China, you know, we don't want to get into that whole communism bad, you know, capitalism good, whatever, but I don't know. So
Mike, was that directed to Michael or?
Well, I don't know, Mike, I don't know if you dealt with any of the intellectual property cases.
Too much about that with that. I mean, my experience comes with my sister, who's a flight attendant with Delta, and she's traveling to Hong Kong and different places. And I see when she comes back and she has DVDs. I guess this is being taped, but I think the statute of limitations has run. But she's provided me a CD for I think it was Harry Potter for my son to watch, my young son, and I put it on and it was all in, you know, the wrong language. But yeah, so there really is no intellectual property protections in countries like China in India and other countries like that.
Yeah.
So, so I take it not only was it the wrong language, but there was probably about a 1.5 second lag from the lip syncing to the dialogue.
Right. And then suddenly Harry Potter broke out into martial arts, which I didn't understand that. But
Well, that's what. Well, clearly you're not an aficionado of the series. That's what happens when you lose your wand.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Well, you mentioned earlier about the Michigan GOP, clearly now we have a new chair of that party. Alan, where's the clip?
This is to set it up. A rabbi is confronting Christina Caramo, who's now head of the GOP, Michigan Party, over her comparison using the Holocaust and gun control. So
wasn't even taken down when I believe you had a lot of complaints, shows a lack of sensitivity. Almost a lack, I hate to say a lack of decency, because it's exploiting the Holocaust.
It's politically motivated and disingenuous to accuse us of trivializing the mass murder of people. That is totally disingenuous.
Caramo, adamant her tweet was not offensive and did not exploit the Holocaust.
Was I celebrating people being mass murdered? Absolutely not.
God. So that was Rabbi Asher Lopatin from the JCRC AJC, local Jewish American organization. Full disclosure, I work very closely with him on a bunch of projects. And here he was doing his job, going out to a press conference after Caramo put this tweet. By the way, it's been a rough week for tweets because Trump had one of him juxtaposed next to Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA. He with a photograph of himself holding a baseball bat. So
was that a tweet or was that a Truth Social post?
I stand corrected. It was a Truth Social meme post.
Okay.
To get all the terminology correct. But go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I was going to say, first of all, you can't tell another group, if you're not part of that group, you can't be offended. Why are you doing this? It's like, you know, Dan Snyder with the Washington, you know, whatever they're now, the general
commanders.
For years, he was being banged on the head by, you know, Native Americans who said we're offended by the Redskins, and he did not care. And it's like, no, he's Jewish. I mean, and so now here it is, you know, this black woman is saying, you know, don't tell me about the Holocaust. And here it is, you know, what was his name? Ben Stein or whatever, when he talked about Aunt Jemima, you know, basically, well, why should you be offended by Aunt Jemima? It's not, you can't tell another group, don't be offended because you're not, you know, it's just, and that's what this woman, I mean, mental illness seems to be one of the, you know, parts of the resume for some of these people who are getting in power. They used to be in the fringe in the Republican Party. Now they're the mainstream. Now they're running it.
They are the Republican Party.
Well, they are the Republican
Marjorie
Party.
Taylor Greene. You got these folks, you know, you used to label them as nutcases, but now they're running the mental institution.
I think you are giving her way too much credit when you say she's mentally ill. She's not mentally ill. I mean, she may have a screw loose, as we say. She's certainly a believer in some completely preposterous conspiracy theories. She's unqualified to be a teacher, which is what she was before she landed her dream job here that's not going to last forever. But, you know, you're right. When somebody stands up and says, that offends me, I think at the very least you owe them the respect to say, I didn't mean it that way. And in this case, she's just telling them to be offended. Now, I think what's really interesting about this story is not what she said, because, you know, it's going to happen again. It's the way other Republicans are reacting to it. Fred Upton, okay. You know, a lot of Republicans would consider him a rhino anyway. But also Dave Trott came forward. Stu Sandler, who is he's some kind of party functionary from back in the day.
Apparatchik.
Still sane. Yeah, apparatchik. And is Jewish, you know, he said he's offended. I mean, there are Republican Jews in the world and they all said, you just don't do this shit. And particularly when we're talking about, I mean, her objection, her comparison was the Holocaust to safe storage laws, red flag laws. And what was the third one? It was a three bill package.
Background checks.
Background checks, exactly. All of which I think fall under what most people who do not have a screw loose would call common sense gun reform. And she's, you know, she immediately turns it up to 11. It's just, you know,
this, it's interesting.
It's going to be interesting to watch her tenure of this party. Let me just put
the whole message was they showed a bunch of rings that had been confiscated.
Yeah, don't we have that? You don't have a picture of that?
You know what? I meant to.
It was a giant box of
a pile of rings
that had been taken off of Holocaust victims before they were sent to their death.
And saying that, you know, here's what happens when you take away guns,
before they took these, they took the guns.
Right.
I think
as I was talking to a Jewish friend who said, how many Jews in Germany do you think had guns?
Yeah.
The Jews aren't big on guns. There's a few.
Moving away from the American gaze, how many Germans owned guns?
Yeah, period.
The whole idea about having multiple firearms in the house is a almost uniquely American thing. But I seem to recall there was a Republican and or conservative talking point going out there saying if the Jews during the Holocaust would have had more guns, they would have been able to stay away from the camps. So you have this exploitation of the Holocaust, and it seems to provide cover. But I'm a little bit more on this point. Where are the internal mechanisms in the state GOP to go ahead and rein her in and say, you know what, this is just not a good idea before she went for the press conference? Yeah,
and I think this answer goes to Adolf, because it's backwards on my screen, because he was talking a few weeks ago about how the sane Republicans were going to handle the insane wing of the party. And didn't you say something about how, Adolf, about how Betsy DeVos is probably putting together some sort of shadow party behind the
probably
scenes?
There's no question. They sitting back and letting them self-destruct. But you know what? It she has a playbook that she got the Ron DeSantis playbook. Only he's smarter than her. He's slicker than her. But they speak in the same rhetoric.
Yeah.
And you know, so when you have someone like her say, I don't need the DeVos money. I don't need this. I don't need that. What the hell do she have?
Yeah.
She's not Donald Trump. She's not going to raise any money. And more when she opens her mouth, she gives the Democrats more and more credibility. There's no question about it.
You know, it's interesting. We see like senators like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema who talk about it. You know, the Democrats are worried, oh, my God, they're going to become Republicans. There's no room in the Republican Party for people like that. There is no room for moderates. There's certainly no room for any, you know, middle of the road type people. And if they think they're going to be embraced, I mean, the Republicans are, yeah, come on aboard. We want your vote. But they're not going to embrace them. I mean, Romney's an outlier.
He's
a conservative guy, and he's an outlier looked at as a, you know, a radical rhino liberal. So these two people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, they talk about, yeah, you know, they rattle that in front of the Democrats to scare them. But there's no room in the Republican Party for them.
Well, they're trying to survive. And the Democratic Senate out of Montana, they got to vote once in a while with the Republicans.
Right.
Because that's the only way they're going to get reelected. There's no question. But they don't belong in the Republican Party. They know they wouldn't survive in a ocean full of piranha fish. Mm-hmm. They'll eat them up. They'll eat them up. There's no question about it.
So notwithstanding the inappropriateness of the comparison, what about the idea that within the conservative and the Republican side of the aisle, people look at any kind of limitations on guns, even those which are regarded by many to be reasonable, as something as traumatic and existential as the Holocaust, meaning that's how they internalize this issue as being so dramatic and so traumatic.
You know, the right had a photo of Jerry Jones when he was 15 in Little Rock. When they was gonna kill the little nine high school kids, they had to have a federal troops, And people say, oh, you shouldn't be offended. He was only 15. But yet we got serial killers that's 15 and 16, people shooting up the schools. So, yeah, you get offended. You just can't say, oh, go get a life. You know what? That was 60 years ago, or that was 70 years ago. They still live in that nightmare.
The Republicans who are screaming, some of the really right-wing Republicans and some of the less brighter ones, start screaming about this is Nazi Germany and they're taking away our guns. Those are the same people supporting the people who march in Charlottesville, who were chanting the Jews will not replace us. They're the same people who promote fascism in this country, and they use that term so loosely, the Nazis and the Holocaust and stuff like that. Meanwhile, at the Capitol on January 6th, we had the guys with the hoodies or the sweatshirts that said, Camp Auschwitz. It's just
6 million was not enough.
Yeah, six million was not enough.
Yeah.
So
one of the other big areas where the right seems to have issues is with, of course, woke culture. Grand Valley State has announced that they will be this year for spring commencement hosting separate graduation celebrations based on race, sexuality, and gender identity, along with having, of course, the general commencement open to all. It is not an either or. People can go to more than one of these commencements, but they have some commencements that are by demographic. Conservative talk radio has been just on a screed about this going on. Are they just looking for issues at this point?
Yeah, because that's old news. The University of Michigan been having the black students there unhad separate graduation ceremonies, general ceremonies. It's been that way, and even some high schools.
When my daughter graduated from the University of Michigan, there were separate graduations for each school. LSAT had their own. She was in the School of Music, Theater, and Dance. They had their own. And then all of that was the day before the Big House exactly. graduation. So it was kind of like having two was pretty normal for that.
Well, that's old news about Grand Valley. They just took it to they're including everybody. Some people feel that they need to be around similar folks. They had similar experience in 4 or 5 years. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
They should have done like we did when we went to Michigan. Nobody went to graduation.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, my parents made me go to graduation.
I watched graduation at Michigan State. A group of us got together and watched it on closed circuit TV while we were drinking beer in this dumpy house.
Wait a minute.
I didn't go to my law school graduation either. So the last one I went to was Mumford.
Well, I just found out you really didn't graduate, Steve.
Wait a minute, Ellen. I'm shocked they didn't let beer into the commencement ceremony at Michigan State.
At MSU, you would think.
You would think about that.
You set a couch on fire.
No, Adolf. That's only during Cedar Fest. Know your holidays.
But I went to Michigan State and I got a degree when I was in the sixth grade. We visited the campus.
Well, what can I say? Hello, Michigan State. We were talking about the game. It was an amazing game yesterday. Really, the level of skills in that game on both sides was just phenomenal. Really?
So, by the way, I would like to go ahead and give a get well soon message to someone who's been on the show before, attorney Jeffrey Feiger, who apparently suffered a stroke after an elective heart procedure. Hope you're on the mend there, Jeffrey, and hope you'll be back on the show.
I think you also need to send out a little bit of support to whoever the doctor was who performed the surgery and that caused Jeffrey Feiger to have a stroke, because I don't think I would want to be that guy or woman, whoever it is. So
yes,
1-800 call Feiger.
Yeah,
Although The Week That Was does not officially have any GoFundMe accounts, I'm suspecting that one will be needed for that. Actually, I would be worried about any patient after Figer right now, because I'm sure that that doctor's hands haven't stopped trembling.
Well, I know. I mean, it's just, it's just got to be, I mean, to have, you know, a personal injury lawyer under your knife in the first place.
Right.
There was a very famous Egyptian singer by the name of Umm Kulsum in the 60s and the 70s. And I think at one point she had, she needed surgery, like some nodules removed from her vocal cords and all. And they couldn't find a surgeon in Egypt who had the courage to do it. Yeah. No one wanted to risk that one.
That's what happened to Julie Andrews. She lost her voice that way. Yeah. So.
Oh, that's tragic. I didn't know that. I mean, is that what explains Victor Victoria? or the fact that she was in 10? I think that had more to do with her husband, Blake Edwards, doing those movies.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Julie Andrews and Disney movies like Mary Poppins, Disney has decided that they are going to go ahead and give it right back to Ron DeSantis by hosting the world's largest LGBTQ+ conference in Orlando. It is going to be a host of corporations, many of whom have very LGBTQ+ or pro-LGBTQ+ policies. They've decided that as Ron DeSantis has tried to be a menace to Disney, taking away some of its special status in the Orlando area, that what better way to pay him back but to go ahead and do this? How big of an issue do you think LGBTQ+ is going to be in the 2024 election?
Well, the Republicans are going to try to make it so. And I have to think it's a mistake. I think we saw during the campaign over Proposal 3 here, the abortion thing, that times have changed. And, you know, birth rates are falling, which means that the labor force is going to become more and more powerful and more, it's going to be harder to get and attract good workers. And if you start out by saying no LGBTQIA, whatever, people need apply, or that you're not tolerant or even supportive of them, you are going to be in trouble. And so it doesn't surprise me that Disney and major corporations are, you know, flying their pride flags. In fact, if you follow social media among gay people or LGBT people, that, you know, pride is almost kind of an eye-rolling experience now, because, you know, oh, look, here's some pride Oreos, you know, here's some pride whatever. I mean, it's like corporations lean into it so hard that it becomes ridiculous. But at the same time, if you aren't valuing your workers who fall into that group, you are going to find yourself short of some pretty good workers.
I think the Republicans are going to ride the woke thing, the whole thing about children, sex education.
Yeah, right.
I think all that's going to be, look, Bush used that, W used that, and I think in 2000 he was going big on in 2000.
You're talking about being supportive or
no, no.
2004 was when Karl Rove pushed the same-sex marriage.
Right. But in the 2000, I remember the abortion, gay marriage was a big deal, and it seemed to resonate. I think they're going to try to make these social issues resonate again, because that's what do they have? They never have. You know, Trump kept saying, I'm going to have in this last election, he said, I'm going to have a new plan for health care. It's coming out in a week. It's coming out in a week. It never came out. I mean, the Republicans are big on the social issues. And, you know, it resonates with some because it scares. You know, I was watching the Charlie LaDuff's video cast podcast, and there was a woman commenting, and she said, oh, my God, Joe Biden, the country, we're losing this country. No respect for us anymore. We have no ethics or morals. So I write and I say, are you saying that Trump is going to bring us ethics and morals? Oh, well, you know, Biden is horrible and Hunter, you know, it's like the whole bullshit. But those things resonate.
They resonate, but I think people, I really have to believe that people are too smart for that.
But if you start boycotting the Super Bowl out of Florida, you know, sports, it can take the lead on all this. When you got kids saying, I'm not going to University of Florida, Florida State, because it's an apartheid state. You know, you got to hit them where it hurts. We're talking about the Bucks. So Miami doesn't get the Super Bowl or whatever bowl. That's all they know.
That's all. Yeah. Exactly.
Well,
that's the way
you know, and the whole thing about teaching about race and stuff like that, and let's not make our kids feel guilty about that we killed all the Indians and stole their land and we enslaved Black people.
They never lynched a Black person in Florida, according to Ron DeSantis. Rosa Parks was politely asked to get out of the seat, and she didn't do it because she was a communist. You know, that sort of thing. That's what they want. But you got to fight back on that and say, you know what? We're taking our dollars someplace else. Fuck Florida. I'm not going to Florida.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree 100%.
Where are the Jews going to go, though?
I don't know what they'll do.
Where do we go when we retire?
I'm still trying to figure out a Pride Oreo, but you know, what's that like, Nancy?
Well, I bought a package of Lady Gaga Monster Oreos once three years ago.
Wow,
they were very sweet. I can tell you that. So,
okay. Oh boy, I'm holding out for the Rihanna Disturbia Oreos to see what those look like. Well, before we go to our last segment, since we do have two esteemed people and officers of the law here, the appellate court has ruled that the Crumley parents must stand trial. It looks like their efforts to reverse that have been exhausted, and they're going to move forward. When do you see this then coming to trial, and any predictions on the outcome?
Michael, you want to go or you want me?
No, you go. I'm curious to what you think.
I would say, number one, we don't know when it's going to go to trial, because if they take it back to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court accepts leave, they can apply for leave only. It's not by right. If the Supreme Court accepts the case, then they'd have to decide it before anything can happen with respect to the trial. That's kind of a two-edged sword for them, though, because the odds of the Supreme Court reversing, I think we discussed this before on this show, the standard of proof at a preliminary exam is very low. Probable cause that a crime occurred, probable cause that the defendants did it. And to reverse the examining magistrate, the district court judge, you have to show an abuse of discretion, which almost means, if you look at some of the case law, that the person was either intoxicated or the judge was not present when he or she made the ruling. They have to realize that if they appeal, that's going to delay the trial, and they're sitting in the can. It'd be different if they're on bond. So who knows when they're going to try the case. With respect to the result, I think I've said this before, and I'll say it 100 times. I don't think they'll be acquitted, but I don't think they'll necessarily be convicted, because remember, you got to get all, as Michael well knows from all of his years doing that, you got to get 12 people to all agree. And some of the times, I'm sure Michael will tell you, when you're in federal court, they're worried about a hung jury, that you're going to get some juror that is just not paying attention, or it's a juror who's just kind of conned us into letting her out, he or she onto the jury. In this instance, you're going to have people who legitimately are going to say, hey, I got kids, or I've had a kid who was a screwball, or my nephew was a screwball, or something like that. I think there's going to be people who are going to have a hard time convicting. That's what I think. I think I could see the result being a hung jury. Very.
I think the one thing is the prosecution's already won. I mean, they've been in prison for a year and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time the trial comes, they'll have served probably 2 years, whether they lose or not. The prosecution has made its point.
That's why I believe they should make a deal with them. I've said that to people who have something to do with the case. I think they should make a deal. I agree with you 100%. They've got the parents' attention, not just these two parents, but other parents. They've got their attention, and they've done what they set out to do, and you know, the courts have allowed it to be bound over and allowed the people to sit in the can. I think they've made their point, get the case over with. These people have not, you know, they didn't try to attack the World Trade Center. So let's get them out of there and get the case over with.
Yeah.
I agree with Steve. I think it's going to be exceedingly difficult to get 12 people to agree because it's such a chaotic and catastrophic event that happened that, you know, if the parents had known that was planned, you know, that would be different, but that's not what happened. It was just, it's more of a, they should have known that something this crazy could happen because they bought a gun for their kid who had some issues, but that's just not going to be enough. I don't think, I don't know that I would convict them if I were a juror. Because, you know, it has to be a level of recklessness where, you know, you have no regard for the welfare of other people. I don't know that you can say that about this husband and wife. They may be the worst parents ever, but I don't know that's going to be enough for a jury to put them in prison any longer. And I also agree with Steve that they should work out a deal because the prosecutor will come out looking good. Karen McDonald will come out looking good because she made a point to not only to people in Michigan, but to the entire nation that, you know, parents could be held culpable for this kind of conduct. And so I think she wins because, like you said, right, Nancy, they've already been in jail. I mean, they would be lucky probably to get 2 years in jail, even if they get convicted. So, right. Yeah. So I think it's a win for the prosecution, even at this point. So I would cut bait with the case just because of all the, you know, the cost benefit analysis of what are you really going to gain by going to trial that you might most likely, or I would say a good chance of not winning.
Do you think the jurors would feel a certain level of social pressure to convict because they don't want to be seen as somebody who let these parents go without being punished?
Well, look, if that's the case, then you could never have jury trials because that type of pressure is present in any jury trial, particularly any case that is getting a lot of media attention. And both Michael and I have had plenty of those cases, not just the ones with each other. And you have to rely on the judge in the case with respect to her instructions. You have to rely on the lawyers being able to communicate. And you have to have some amount of trust in human beings that they're going to come up there. They are in a courthouse. They've got their hand in the air swearing to tell the truth. And you got lawyers and the judge who are questioning them in the voir dire process. I don't think that's something necessarily that's going to, is it going to affect some people? Sure. And is it worse now, given the fact that the omnipresence of the media? Sure. But I still have faith in the jurors being able to do what they think they should do, regardless of what they think somebody else is going to say about it.
Got it. Okay. Alan, why don't we hear from our sponsor?
I'm Wayne County Treasurer Eric Sabree. There are payment plans available to help save your property. Visit our website at treasurer.waynecounty.com or email us at taxinfo@waynecounty.com for further information. We're here to help.
All right.
Okay, that means now. It is that time of the show.
Downtown Detroit, Robert Wells, Smart of the Week.
Robert, that's Robert. That's my
LA person. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Robert's
Charlie
great.
Person.
Michael, big sports fan.
In the morning or text and says, when are you coming in? So we got to be here on a certain time.
We have a big Ford building alumni here.
That's right.
Right.
Michael, who's your schmuck of the week then?
Okay. Well, I was going to go with Egyptian singer Kufen, but I don't want to offend you.
Do I look Egyptian? I am now offended.
No, I just had a certain affinity for Miss Kufen. But anyway, it's going to be. I gotta bring up the ongoing litigation between one Tiger Woods and his girlfriend Erica Herman of 6 years. All right, so here's a guy who's worth $1.1 billion, at least according to the interweb. And he has this young lady who he would like to part ways with, presumably amicably, and she simply wants her $40,000 that she claims she left at the house, and she wants a place to stay for a few years. Okay, if you have that kind of money. Yeah, well, she says he promised him 4 years, but certainly you can translate that into a payment. You know, it'd be like me running out of gas and calling up a Saudi prince and saying, hey, would you mind? Hey, it's not very hard. So just do it. Why do you want to have litigation? Why do you want to, round two of what happened in 2008, 2009, with all that craziness with the, you know, 400 bimbo explosion? So why are you doing that, Tiger? Don't be a schmuck. And don't be a schnur. I don't know if that's the right words to use.
Schnur.
Yeah. If you're cheap, I don't know. I think he's both my schnorr and my schmuck of the week.
And a schmuck. Okay.
Reminds me of that movie in the 80s, Better Off Dead, where there was the paper boy. He's like, I want my $2.
Yes.
It's like, it's only 40K. Come on, Tiger. You can do better than that. It's not like you joined LIV, the Soviet League. All right. Adolf, who's your schmuck of the week?
Yeah, the family of killers, the Murdochs. Now we're going to find out that Buster and killed a classmate. The grandfather killed his father. Listen, that whole family is fucked up. So yeah, Murdoch.
Who needs succession when you've got that? Okay. So David Porter is schmuck of the week, this Michigan State or Minnesota State Senator who never met anyone from Minnesota who is hungry. He voted against school lunches.
That's a good one.
That's a good one, David.
That's a good one. Because I watched that video of the guy talking, and he's like, who's hungry? I've never met anyone who's hungry. He goes, you know, I just had like a granola bar for breakfast. Am I hungry? Maybe.
That's up there with former president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. We don't have any gay people. So, Fish, who's your schmuck of the week?
Well, I had it made up when I came here, and I'm still going to stick with her, even though we already talked about her. Christina Karama, I just can't get past I actually watched the video this morning before I came to work of her talking and trying to defend this whole idiotic stuff about how trying to pass any reasonable gun control measures are the same as taking everybody's wedding rings from the people who they killed in the Holocaust. I just want to add this. I think what Adolf said, I agree with him 1,000%. I hope the girl stays as the Republican Party head for the rest of her life. Because right now, they couldn't win an election for dog catcher in West Branch, for God's sake, let alone a statewide race. And I she's my schmuck of the week, but she's my heroine of the week, too. And I hope she has a long life and a long stay as the head of the Republican Party. And we'll never have to worry about any of those assholes being in power again.
Yeah.
You know, if she drives her car into the river, she probably call you after she killed her family.
Crazy.
Nancy.
Oh, I start my week with a blank sheet of paper on the left-hand side of my planner, and I write down schmuck candidates, and I usually have two or three, but at the end of this week, I have but one, and his name is Charlie LaDuff. I hope you can read that. Charlie LaDuff, earlier this week, in his ceaseless capering before the right-wing journalism foundation or you know, establishment represented by Fox News and his close personal friend Tucker Carlson, today in his tweet blamed Alyssa Slotkin for the Iraq war and referred to her as Baghdad Betty, when it's pretty clear that yes, Alyssa Slotkin worked for the CIA, and yes, she did some time in Iraq, but she was probably a junior analyst at best at the time that the Iraq war broke out. And I think it's a little bit of a stretch to say, what did her intelligence accomplish? And then, you know, all the numbers. And that he says, Baghdad Betty wants to be your senator. So, you know.
Yeah.
Like if he wants to make waves with, if he wants to make points with Republicans, why don't he go after Christina Karamo? But, you know. So,
yeah, I kind of think that George Tenet probably
had a little more to do
vetoed anything. Yeah, I'd imagine. Okay, yeah, exactly. Alan.
I got a couple. One, Jim Jordan trying to intimidate the Manhattan district attorney, trying to, in the middle of an investigation. And here's, we're talking about, you know, we're talking about states' rights, which the Republicans are so big on. And yet, here he is trying to interfere and derail a local prosecution, which he has no business. And my other one is the Utah governor, Spencer Cox, who signed into law legislation that's going to require minors to get parental permission before they can join social media, which is just really dangerous. I mean, when you see, and you see that reaching the governor's desk and being signed into law, I mean, we can't forget about the First Amendment. We can't forget about our Constitution and just taking away rights after rights. It's a scary, you know, It's a scary path to go down.
Except for, keep in mind, as I've said on this before, when I become king, there will be no more social media. Nancy will not know what to do with herself. It'll be done. That's
dead.
It.
Social media dead to me.
So let it be written, so let it be done. So.
That's right.
Oh, man, that movie's got to be coming up again pretty soon.
I think Passover, it is. It's usually like Palm Sunday weekend. They usually
Watching the campiest performance by Charlton Heston in the campiest movie of all time. Yeah.
One of my dear friends, I walked in the middle of it. They had a party every year to watch the Ten Commandments, which is what we're talking about here. Wow. I walked in one day
The green food dye that was the 10th plague, the angel of death, used to scare the crap out of me.
Right. Yeah. I said, I walk in and I said, has he parted the Red Sea yet? And he says, oh no, first he has to meet Yvonne DiCarlo and raise her sheep. So I was thinking that line.
But then of course you have John Derek, who, you know, was the heartthrob for so many.
God, yes, exactly.
But Fish, I mean, who needs the government to ban TikTok when you're probably going to ban all smartphones? Talk about Sherman's scorched earth policy.
Just keep in mind, that's what you call it. What I call it, as you guys well know, is addictive devices. That's
yes,
what they
I know.
That's smartphone.
I know. Tomato, tomato. Okay. Well, I've got a few schmucks here. Okay. First one is the Tallahassee Classical School, a Florida charter school, because apropos Adolf's attitude toward Florida. They went ahead and dismissed the principal after three parents complained when the art teacher showed a picture of Michelangelo's 16th century statue of David, which, of course, anyone who's been to Florence or have seen a picture knows that it shows him in the altogether. Barney Bishop III, the chair of the school board, said, "We're not going to have courses from College Board. We're not going to teach 1619 or CRT crap." And basically, apparently, they're not going to have.
They're not going to show you David's dick either. So
apparently not. But segueing from that, another schmuck of the week has to be Isha Weisman, who is, according to the lawsuit that he filed, a gentleman of advanced age who was traveling on board a Boeing 787 Dreamliner on El Al from Tel Aviv to New York's JFK. He is suing El Al for not teaching him how to use his business class seat. Apparently, the failure to instruct on how to use the seat led his, quote, lower extremity to become trapped when the seat was in a reclined position. A flight attendant then was summoned, who forcibly pulled him out. The result was permanent injury, including great pain, agony, and mental anguish. I always thought the buttons were self-explanatory, but there you go for that lawsuit. And then finally, the Heritage Foundation's Mike Howell, the director of their oversight project, because Ahab has nothing on this guy. Apparently not satisfied that Prince Harry has left or been removed from the United Kingdom. Now Mike Howell is questioning whether or not Harry violated immigration law by apparently lying on his application, whether he admitted to drug use, which he did in several interviews, and including his autobiography titled Spare. So it seems as though the Heritage Foundation is looking to cancel Harry, cancel his visa, which could actually have him removed. I mean, this is serious. From the United States for making a willful material misrepresentation on a visa form. I have a feeling that we will find out sooner rather than later that the Heritage Foundation is underfunded by none other than Queen Consort Camilla Parker Bowles, but we'll just have to wait to see about that. All of them then are schmucks of the week. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you again for our awesome group of panelists. Michael Bellotta, Steve Fishman, Adolf Mongo, Nancy Derringer, and of course with Alan Lengel on the fast last word.
Drive home safely.
Have a great week, everybody.
See ya.